CliffCentral.com.
All right. CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning. It is just after 7 o'clock. We've got a human lie detector joining us in a short while this morning. Lebang and Mbulelo and I, here to keep you company. And we just had a really fun discussion with JJ Cornish. If you missed that in the first hour of the show, you can download the podcast and hear what it was all about. You want to know what's happening in the headlines this morning, since we just breezed right past all of that? Interested?
Yeah, let's hear what's going on.
Okay, so first of all, Jacob Zuma, obviously, he's our national obsession. How did he go from being not ill to being hospitalized for a routine checkup to eventually being on medical parole? Well, within a month, the imprisoned former president went from being absolutely fine to ending up on medical parole. On Sunday, the 4th of September, the Department of Correctional Services announced that he had been placed on medical parole. In August, he was admitted to hospital outside the Escort Correctional Center, where he was serving a 15-month sentence. According to a statement by the department, apart from being terminally ill and physically incapacitated, inmates who suffer from an illness that severely limits their daily activity or self-care can also be considered for medical parole. So, this statement did not specify whether he was terminally ill, physically incapacitated, or suffering an illness that severely limits his daily activity or self-care, so they haven't told us what's actually going on. But he will have to comply with a specific set of conditions. The Constitutional Court, of course, sentenced him to 15 months in prison for contempt of court after he refused to testify to the state capture inquiry. He'd been imprisoned at the Escort Correctional Center in KZN, and you can already hear the conspiracy theorists going, but is he really? Did he even go to jail? But there were those pictures of him, you know, waiting to be processed as a criminal, as a prisoner. Anyway, his placement on medical parole stands in stark contradiction to what his foundation said less than a month earlier, his own foundation. Apparently, they said that he was fine. He was in great physical condition. There's nothing to worry about. And now the foundation spokesperson, Zwaneli Manyi, has said Zuma was taken to hospital for his normal annual medical checkup. Whether in prison or not, he would have been due for that anyway, said Manyi. And they said he was looking forward to his court appearance in Maritzburg for his plea. According to Manyi,
I don't know what to believe anymore.
Exactly.
Well, that's the biggest lie. There's nothing to look forward to in Maritzburg. So already, you know, they're lying there.
Zuma subsequently said he would not attend his court appearance. The court further directed the state to appoint a doctor of its choice to examine him. But he refused. He said, I don't want your doctor. I'm not going to subject myself to an examination by your doctor. And now suddenly he finds himself in medical parole. Now, I don't know who to believe here either, like Lebang says, but it sounds to me like a very complicated scenario where there's a whole lot of bullshit going on. And how do you know whether this one is telling the truth or that one's telling the truth, or if any of them are telling the truth, frankly? And should we even care at this point? Because we know that his friend Shabir, who as far as I can tell still alive and still plays a lot of golf, and he seems to be living a pretty good life, but we were assured by the National Prosecuting Authority, and in fact by the Correctional Services Department, that Shabir was deathly ill and he needed to go onto medical parole and eventually be released because things were just not going well for him. He had like barely a few days to live. Remember that stuff? Mm. So now they're doing the same thing with Jacob Zuma because, of course, our memories are so short. Must be nice to be connected. Must be nice to be a very powerful politician who has a lot of supporters in the ruling party, because you can have them make shit up about how sick you are when you're not. That's what I really think is going on. If I'm going to believe anyone,
is he the most? Is he the most rapacious South African we've ever had?
Rapacious is a good word. Rapacious. Jesus. Okay, so rapacious we can interpret in two ways. I'm going to give you the favorable interpretation, is that he has subjected the entire country to his desires and his will and his greediness. If that's what you mean, yes, he probably is. He probably is. I can't think of anyone before, even like those early colonists in the Cape who really just took whatever land they wanted and built the. Even that was a small scale. He did that to the country. You know, that's a much bigger deal in terms of the amount that he schmuckled out. And I also think he's got away with it better than anyone else. Maybe history will judge him more harshly, but he seems to have got away with it.
It was easier with the colonial guys. Is they are white, they're killing the black people. This guy's black, and he has condemned millions of black people to, if not death,
careful now.
Lives like cockroaches.
Careful now, because you have to be able to draw a perfect line between his activity and someone else's poverty, and that's going to be difficult to prove.
I tell you what. In a company, it's quite easy, actually, because I look at countries as companies. Is he's the CEO in any company. You go to with Marcus Yuster, we were very clear. Yeah, okay, you screwed up. Yeah. Everything's your fault. Mm-hmm. And I told you earlier, everything's your fault. Under Jay-Z's watch, I don't want any excuses. Yeah. Everything's his fault. If you're on watch, it's your fault.
Mel Van Rooyen says, this is interesting. I worked with medical parole applications as a social worker. The applicants often passed away just waiting for the result of the application. But it's been processed very quickly for Gelehlehisa. So.
Yeah, look, it's all about who you know.
Yeah.
It's because Mal doesn't know about the Shabir Sheikhs. Well, once you get the Shabir Sheikhs,
then there's a different set of things that come into play. So there's a new deadline for the election candidate nominations, because how's the ANC? So. The ANC didn't get their candidate lists in on time. Now, that's your only job as the ANC. Now, they've got people right now protesting outside Luthuli House who haven't been paid. These are people who just work in the Luthuli House building, right? These are ANC people, cleaners and people who are doing administration, and people perhaps who also had to do the candidate lists. Who knows? They haven't got a secretary general because he is currently suspended, Ace Magashule. They couldn't get their candidate lists in for 90 municipalities. There are only about 200 and something in the country, maybe 260. And almost half of those, they didn't even have not one candidate for each of those wards or those municipalities. Just think about how incompetent you have to be to not even put your names of your people in. So what did they do? They went, give us a chance. So we had to give them another chance, and now they have apparently been given permission by the IEC to submit their lists, even though they were late. So the DA said, screw you, no, we're going to take this to court, because you shouldn't be allowed to have special conditions. Why should your party, because it's in disarray and doesn't know its ass from its elbow, why should you be given extra time to file your lists when every other party managed to do it on time? And parties with a lot less money and a lot less organization than you're supposed to have.
Can I ask you a question on that?
But you know what it's all about, right? It's about money. Because for every candidate, you have to pay a registration fee. And the ANC has got no more money because they've stolen it all and spent it all.
Yeah.
What did you want to ask?
I always wonder.
No, you wanted to ask
right,
something.
And I'd love to hear your opinion, both you and Lebang. I always wonder what, like, when people hear about South Africa, because I can only think of South Africa, I wonder what Angela Merkel used to think when she used to actually have to waste her time and come and talk to, like, Jacob or whoever. Just, like, what is she thinking? Because I know serious people in my life, and they will not have their time wasted by anybody. I wonder what Merkel used to think, like, man, clown here.
Can I tell you something? I think Merkel's, like, I think she's an automaton. I don't even think she has feelings. I think she, we have to go to Africa. We have to negotiate these trade deals, which we have got in place already. It was all very, like, organized and pünktlich und richtig und richtig und genau. And she knew she could come in and she could sort her shit out, and then she could get on a plane and go back. And she didn't, when she got on the plane, she didn't go, oh, that was terrible, because she actually doesn't care. I don't think she has had a feeling.
It's the smokes and mirrors concept, in my opinion. It's literally, it's that bad. Everything is so transparent, and it's clear that everything has just gone to the dogs so much that it's like, how can you actually take anything seriously? That's why I spend so much of my time just, like, ignoring it and trying to see what I can do within my personal capacity just to make it less crappy because it's so crappy. Every other week, it's just a different story. And again, what do you believe at the end of the day? Yeah. It's like, you know, what's the solution, government? What's your guys' plan? Well, they don't have one for the most part.
Kanda Kulu says, Chancellor House is loaded, Luthuli House is broke. Well, not actually, because they're struggling to get party funding, even for elections. This is the big problem. Like Jesse Duarte was out there the other day, you know, running under tables without bending her knees because she's that small. She was running around begging for money. Like the ANC's got no money. No one will fund them anymore. People, big companies, and formerly the people who were part of the tenderpreneur network, they're not giving the ANC money anymore because they wonder whether the ANC is actually going to be in power. So, you know, the minute you're not guaranteed to be the government, people go, well, why should we give you some cash? So they're in a big state of disrepair and disintegration at the moment. And you know what? Couldn't happen to nicer people, so I'm enjoying watching it.
I think they're also in denial a little bit. Like, I saw a video yesterday of, like, a very, very old gogo chasing the ANC door-to-door knockers, chasing them away. Like an old gogo. She's like, get off my stoop.
I love that.
I don't want to see you. And if Ugogo is at the point where she's not even willing to vote for ANC, then you know that it's a wrap. So they're in hot water because they've been banking on, like, giving out free groceries and smiling and waving. It's just not working anymore. So, yeah, look, we'll see.
And from the sublime to the ridiculous, Hollywood star Kristen Stewart, maybe no stranger to the paparazzi, but after playing Princess Diana on the silver screen, she feels that no one can understand what it felt to be like Princess Diana. There's a new movie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. And Kristen Stewart. I mean, wasn't she the chick from all those vampires?
Who cares?
Anyway,
I mean,
I know. But
legit, what?
I'm doing this. I'm telling you this story, Mbulelo, just to piss you off. Are you ready? The new movie, Spencer, premiered at the Venice Film Festival on Friday with Stewart, the latest actor to play Diana, whose marriage to Britain's Prince Charles ended in scandal and divorce. She later died in a Paris car crash in 97 after fleeing photographers. So this movie is all about her decision to flee the pressures of the royal family and take control of her own life. Are you excited yet?
You know,
Kristen Stewart says, I have tasted a high level of fame, but really kind of nowhere near that monumental symbolic representation of an entire group of people, an entire country and the world, she said. I can relate, but I don't think anyone can understand what it felt like to be Diana.
What?
Sorry.
Shut the front door.
But I'm sorry.
But you know what? They're all shithouses. I mean, cancel the whole British royalty thing. That's a whole lot of crap itself. And then just cancel Hollywood while we're at it. It is all such shithousery.
Gross.
In her defense, her acting was actually pretty believable. I was like, that's very Diana-ish. Like, she got those little mannerisms quite
okay.
I liked it. I liked her on The Crown. I won't lie.
No. That's a different woman.
I'm giving props to the wrong person.
You're giving props to the wrong person. So this is Kristen Stewart. Do you remember the vampire things? What was it called? The
Vampire Diaries.
No. The Twilight. You know the Twilight, those ones? She was
Do you know the Twilight dickhead's Batman now?
Apparently.
I don't know if you know that. That's who we are. That's what we're doing now.
So this is Kristen Stewart. She was the girl in the Twilight series who was in love with the vampire and the werewolf. Remember that whole thing? It's like some kind of...
Wait, the chick who ended up, like, was she not, like, dating the main guy and then she dated the director? Woo!
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, she's playing Diana in this new movie, which has just made its debut, so you haven't seen it yet. And look, she may be very good at it, but there's this... Diana might have been an incredible woman, and I'd never met her, but I have every reason to believe that she was a genuinely good humanitarian person who actually cared a lot about other people. She obviously had lots of problems too, and we're starting to learn more about those things from her sons, inter alia. You know, we found out about that Panorama interview where she really was tricked into saying some of the things that she said by the media. She wasn't... she was a bit naive, and she definitely had some mental health issues, if not eating disorders and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm not going to judge someone on their personal life because it's none of my business. And frankly, who the hell am I? What I'm absolutely convinced of is that there is a certain kind of person in the world who idolizes Diana, who is just the most puerile and stupid.
No, the British... No, the royal family. Don't say Diana. They're all shithouses.
No, but
the whole thing is shithousery, and I will not hear
anything. No, hold on. There's a difference, because there are those people in the world who are obsessed with Diana. They're not obsessed with the royal family. They don't really care about the Queen or Prince Charles or any of that shit. They're interested. Diana to them represents like some kind of saintliness on earth. And they're obsessed with her, the outfits she wore, and they're obsessed with the hairstyles she had, and that kind of shit. It's just like this level.
She was iconic.
Yeah.
Like.
Now, those people to me are the most deranged of all. But I'm, you know, again, like, what do I know? So that's going on at the
ignorance
moment.
Ignorance is bliss, guys. Ignorance is bliss. Like, growing up seeing Diana, for me, I was like, who is this cool white lady kissing all the kids, dressed well? I was obsessed with her. I was one of those people.
See,
I was like, whoa.
Go.
And then I watched The Crown, and I was like, oh, no, she was quite troubled. She was young. There was a lot going on that she wasn't in control of.
Sure.
So I guess what you're saying is, yeah, it's real. Side note, that lady sucks. Kristen Stewart is actually the bottom of the barrel. Her acting is crap. I don't know why they keep giving her chances. She did some Charlie's Angels spin-off, of which I don't know why they did that. I am just pissed off that they chose her, because I'm like, Kristen Stewart, it rings a bell. I just checked who it is. It's that stupid-ass chick. Why does Hollywood keep giving her a chance? Why? She's really not it. That great. And now she's doing Diana. I'm upset.
Now we get the truth. We get the truth out of Le Bang. The bottom of the barrel, Kristen Stewart.
She's burned.
That's crazy.
She's bollocks. Ah.
All right, so here's something interesting. TikTok has overtaken YouTube in terms of views. App users in the UK and the US. And don't tell me you don't know at some deep level that this isn't China's way of making you even more stupid. It is. This is precisely what TikTok is there for. And if you think it's anything more than that, you're an idiot. TikTok is an application that is meant to distract the young people of the Western world while China takes your lunch. And if you are, if you think I'm making that up and you think it's some kind of conspiracy theory, just wait and see. Because Chairman Xi and all of his friends back in Beijing are sitting there going, ha, 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 you're so stupid, because they're busy getting us hooked on TikTok, doing stupid dances and nonsense. And they own the platform. Like, we don't even own the means for our own downfall in this respect. So China's thrilled, and this is just great news for them, because look how dumb the kids in the Western world are. They are going to spend more time on TikTok. They're projected to spend more time already than they do on YouTube. App Annie is a monitoring firm. They've indicated the average time per user spent on apps is higher for TikTok, with higher levels of engagement too. However, YouTube retains a top spot for overall time spent, not per user, as it has many more users overall. The Google-owned video giant has an estimated 2 billion monthly users, while TikTok's most recent public figures suggested it had 700 million in mid-2020. The time spent metric only accounts for Android phones, but also does not include China, where TikTok, locally known as Douyin, is a major app. So there we go.
Yeah, look,
it's all happening.
It's hectic. It's quite hectic. I think if anything, YouTube is feeling it. There's this thing called I think it's called YouTube Stories.
Yes.
Or Shorts. Yeah, the Shorts, where it's literally just like you just swipe up and see like a whole bunch of short videos. I had no idea what this was until I saw like my daughter, who's turning 2 next month. She always jacks my phone like every chance she gets. So there's like a YouTube for Kids app that I prefer for her to use.
Yes.
But then she sort of exits that and goes to the real YouTube, and she's just swiping up on all these shorts. And I'm like, is this a TikTok YouTube version? What's going on? And it's just, it's messy. So they're feeling it is the point. They also just have this whole new version of their like mini TikTok going on. And I'm just like, I can't keep up with all these different things. I just don't know what to do anymore. How do I just block these apps? Because I don't know what's going on there.
Annette agrees with you about Kristen Stewart, that she's total shit.
Thank you, Annette. You and I should have lunch sometime.
Jean says, why is there another Princess Diana movie? I'm tired of movies and shows being remade. Where's the originality? Zanele says that I can feel Mbulelo's anguish in the Princess Diana story. Lol, Gareth, please say that again in Trump's voice, says Derek. No, I won't. Beth says, China is using TikTok to study Western behavior and saying, oh, hell no, we're not having that in China. Mm-hmm. Correct. Correct.
Yeah, I don't know if we needed China's help to get any dumber.
We heard the other day that in China, the government has decided. And in China, you only need the government to decide something. The ordinary people don't get to make up their own minds. The government said kids in China will only spend a maximum of 1 hour online a day. Max. Rule. That's the rule. So you tell me, if they're banning their own kids from going online for more than an hour a day, they know it's bad, right? They know that this is... And yet, here in the Western world... just use it as much as you like. And here's some TikTok. Try this. Nice.
Here's some TikTok.
But that's not on China. That's on us.
Is about right. It's tick. It's like a mental drug. Telling you.
Yeah, no, we that's not on China. That's on us in the Western world. I was thinking about something the other day which terrified me. I had a cold sweat of, hey, if we're getting more obese as adults, mm-hmm. Our children are inevitably going to be that, right? Because children adopt from their parents.
Yes.
So, hey, shout out to China. Hey, charge it to the game. Come on. Xi Jinping will tell you.
Charge it to the game, player.
Right. Pancho says, we should throw out the smartphones. We would be better off as a society and a culture.
I don't know about that.
I don't know if we could survive. I don't know what people would do without their cell phones. I think they'd go mad.
We just need self-control. Like, the smartphones can stay. We just need better self-control. Like, number one, turn off your notifications for certain apps. Like, if you struggle with distractions and you know that you're not that strong mentally to just block things out, just then turn off notifications. Find a way. But I do think, you know, there's some pros and cons to that. But what are we going to do without smartphones? What did we do before? Play Snake on 3310 all day? I mean...
Got to ask you something. Because we haven't really been traveling very much in terms of even just getting in the car and going to the office compared to previous years, right? I mean, everybody is looking at travel and thinking, well, I've saved a lot of money here. But have you really? Because I filled up my car the other day, and it was over 1,000 rand. Now, I don't remember it being over 1,000 rand 3 years ago. Or am I just being stupid? Has everything gone up? Is everything more expensive? Because it feels like that. I know that it's not necessarily true, but it feels to me like everything's more expensive. And you only figure it out when you actually sit and you do a comparison.
You know, you'd think that you can afford more because of lockdown. Well, in the sense of, you know, you can't spend on the stuff that you used to spend on. Like you said, Gareth, we're not traveling, so we're not spending money on travel. We can't go out, so we're not spending money on going out. So you'd think that maybe I should have a little bit more in savings or whatever. No, that's not the case. I'm spending so much more on electricity. Things are just cack expensive. And I'm like, how did we get here, really? Like, what did we do? What's the sudden shift? It's a lot.
I'm telling you, it's costing us a lot more money. And just
marry rich.
You have to marry rich. There aren't enough rich partners for all of us. That's the problem. We're going to be in trouble because we're running out of rich people.
I tell you the jackpot is you have to wait for someone to be the first divorce. That's where you really marry rich. She brings the money. You've got to – don't worry. That's a meat market. It's a sausage factory. Right. Divorce rates I read the other day are up to 60%. Marry rich.
Yeah, and apparently COVID has also helped those divorce rates soar to sky high levels. So we're seeing
more rich damsels in distress.
Yeah, well, so you're saying that this is for men to marry rich? You know, that's
well, I don't.
You don't.
Well, as a man, yes, yeah, sure. Marry rich across the board. Marry rich.
All right,
man, woman, they.
But at what cost, Mbulelo? At what cost?
At a cost where I don't need to look at the slip when I buy my shiitake mushrooms. That marry rich.
All I'm saying is, like, I'm definitely looking for discounts. I'm definitely, like, on the hunt for when there's a sale. I find myself on Facebook Market more than often. Like, it's just, I'm there now. Like, filling up is even just a dream.
I'm not joking. A friend of mine, 94 years old, I always talk about her rose. She always says, your first marriage is for money. Your second one is for love. And she's been dead serious. Dead serious.
And she's how old?
94. Oh,
so, yeah.
Beth says, holy shiitake mushrooms. We filled our tiny tank the other day. It cost me over $600. Sure, yeah. Mongezi says, pardon me for asking, why do you always say we in the West? I mean, I did put inverted commas on that, Mongezi. But the fact is, like, our culture, we watch American TV. We buy American products. We have American fast food companies. The culture, the dominant culture in South Africa isn't Chinese. And it certainly isn't our own, because we don't necessarily have a homogenous South African culture.
Sadly so.
If there is a dominant culture here, you know, look around you, dude. I mean, what are you wearing? What are you wearing? What language do you speak when you are in business or in public or in media? What kind of movies do you consume? What sorts of literature are you reading? What kind of, where is it all coming from? It's coming from the West.
Yeah.
So when I say that, it's
we've
not,
been heavily influenced by the West. I mean, that's a fact. Whether we like it or not, I mean.
Yeah, and I'm certainly not judging whether it's better or worse, but I do think it is currently it's better than the Chinese superculture. So there's the Western superculture, the Chinese superculture, and then possibly a few others. Like, you know, the European has kind of been subsumed into a general idea of the West, with America leading that one. But you know, there are only a few cultures you can have superseding all the others, and I think that's the current state of affairs. It's not to say that it will always be that way. In fact, things are changing fairly quickly thanks to things like TikTok. But you got me. I mean, like, you know, social media is also, it's all kind of out of America. That, you know, we have some other influences, but most of that comes from America. So that's where I say that we're a Western-influenced country. All right, let us turn our attention now to someone who is a human lie detector. You know, most people lie in any 10-minute conversation, even if it's just a white lie, saying, I'm okay, when they're not. You know, you ask some people, you say to them, how are you doing? I'm okay. Meanwhile, they're going through all kinds of shit. So have you ever dealt with a colleague and deep inside you knew they weren't telling the truth? You could just tell that they were hiding things from you. They did not send the report to you on email. And, oh, I don't know how you didn't get that email. You know, that kind of thing. Now it's affecting your reputation. That kind of thing. How do you deal with lying that affects you directly? Well, Lizette Falkveen is a master life coach. She's a published author, a human lie detector, and you can find her on Instagram. Go to Lizette, Lizette, underscore Falkveen, Falkwyn, and she joins us this morning. Hey, Lizette, how are you?
Well, I'm here. Thank you for having me, Gareth.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Listen, are you really a human lie detector?
Yes, I am. I've gone through the course in Manchester in 2013.
Yes.
I've done the Dr. Paul Ekman science. So it's a complete science where we actually look at the way you speak, your micro expressions, the way your unconscious mind reveals yourself. And that's what I do.
It's a pretty amazing thing, but it must make your life a bit of a misery, because you're seeing every day how much nonsense and bullshit humans are trotting out, and how many times they lie during a day. How good do you think most people are at covering up their lies?
Well, not very good, unfortunately. But answering the question of having a miserable life, you know, it's like a doctor. A doctor doesn't walk in the mall and go, oh, that patient is sick and that patient is sick. You know, I choose to switch on the antennas when needed. Unfortunately, I'm a life coach too, so I can help myself a little bit mentally as well with all the hogwash I see.
Now, let me just give people an idea. You've completed over 20,000 one-on-one coaching hours. You have clients in more than 20 countries, and you've shared the stage with international thought leaders like Russell Fox, Justin Cohen, Robin Banks. These are people who are well-known to us on this show. You've also written an article called How to Deal with Liars at Work, and that's really the reason we wanted to have you on today, because to talk about lying in general is always fun. And there's so much material to get into there. But when you're at work, how can you tell if someone is lying?
Well, the biggest thing is, which we need to understand, us as humans want to make sure that people are believable and we're going to trust them. And nobody's going to lie to you.
Mm.
And after the first smell, I always say, the moment you pick up on something that people are lying to you, you need to put up your alerts and the red flags and say, hold on, I'm looking at it. And you need to understand your liar are depending on it that you will not call them out. Your liar is depending on that you will avoid him and avoid conflict. Because what do? We don't want the conflict. We don't want to jeopardize our reputation or jeopardize our position at work by creating conflict. It seems as if we are not a team player. And that's what they are waiting for and counting on.
But also, I mean, the cost of calling someone out for a lie and them then not being guilty of that lie, that cost is much higher than the cost of the actual lie itself. Because if you get accused of calling someone a liar, that's much worse than being a liar.
True, but when we start picking up on someone who are lying, the most important thing is to start doing an audit trail, whether it's via email or via WhatsApp or whether if it's with a voice call, record it. Because the first time you're going to tell me I've sent that email and you didn't, boy, oh boy, I will confirm it. I'm saying, as per our telephonic conversation, I'm confirming that you've sent that email. And, you know, that's what you need to do, so, unfortunately.
All right, but we live in a world where technology is helping us to disguise our lies much worse. In other words, technology allows us to expose the liars a lot better. Surely, there are some people who used to be very good at lying, but now it's much, much harder because we have records of everything. You know, before you'd say, well, you know, it's in the mail, and then you could blame the post office. Before you could say, no, we were in that meeting together, and maybe the person who was taking down the notes for the meeting just forgot to write that down. You can't really get away with that anymore because everything's online recorded. There's an archive of it somewhere. Why do people still lie? Why do they do this? Especially small, stupid lies.
Well, Gary, that's a true, a good question. You know, people only lie for two reasons, either for pain or for gain. And when you start understanding that human behavior, and you have to understand, the good news is not everybody lies on purpose and to deceive people. It's a small percentage of people out there who really wants to lie, to really be vindictive or really get something out of it to hurt other people.
Hmm.
So when we look at that lie, they will still lie because if I'm going to lie because I was late, because I overslept, and I knew I had to tell my boss the same story again and again and again, I'm going to lose my job. So I'm going to tell a white lie because it's a gain for me and we're avoiding the pain not to be fired.
Right.
So there's still that intent, but we need to understand the prolific liars. They get so used to lying that the sensitizing in the minds are being switched off. So there's not any more that control over how I lie. And that is why people continue to lie, because they get away with it.
Wow. Let's just look at this quickly. How can you pick up that someone is telling you a bullshit story? How can you tell it's a lie? Give us some of those clues that you've learned about that you could start to see.
Well, I think I'm going to use one of the most recognized lies that it was President Bill Clinton. You know, one of the things that we don't know, and yes, just for the record, you know, your nose and your ears grows until you die, that we all know. But your nose and your nose and your ears is the first things that will tell you that you are lying. Because we really get the Pinocchio nose. Your nose get a lot of blood vessels going to it because your unconscious mind says, I don't believe a word you're saying. So your nose will get a bit more redder and it will start itching.
Really?
So the moment that happens, you are picking up on lies. And please, not when everybody touching their nose are lying, but if you look at Bill Clinton's testimonial, while he was telling the truth, he didn't touch his nose once. But the moment he started lying, he touched his nose 26 times during his testimony after he started lying. So, yes, the nose is a good tell, that Pinocchio nose. But you have to have a baseline. And when you start understanding the baseline, and my pitch changes. So if you are saying, are you enjoying the show? And I go, oh, of course I do. Hello? My basic baseline just changed.
Right.
So, no, I'm lying. And you know, you have to have a look at the theatrical stage. People go and say, oh, the eyes, you know, they look at the left or the right, that is, that's the tip of the iceberg. There are so much deeper you need to understand about the eyes to really read into which side I'm looking into.
You know,
there's quite a few tells.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, the thing about the nose, because I do – here, I'm touching my nose now. You can see, right? I do remember Bill Clinton during his I did not have sexual relations with
sexual
that woman.
Sexual relations.
Not a single time. I did not lie under oath, and I have to go back to work for the American people. And he was so adamant. Yeah. He was so like – Yeah. He was very convincing. I mean, he was pretty good at it. Yeah. I think he persuaded a lot of people that he was actually not a liar at that point.
Yeah. But do you understand, Gareth, a lot of our people and most human beings have the ability to pick up on lies.
Yes.
But what we do is because we are so close to these people, we want to believe that you won't lie to me. So I overlook the tells. And I convince myself that you are telling the truth. I mean, we're using Bill Clinton now as an example, but what he did in that interview, he said, I have never had any sexual relationships with that woman.
Yeah.
So when we start lying, we're trying to push it away as if it's not part of me. Huh. And that are the things we can pick up on when people are start lying to me. I did not bring that report for you.
Yes.
You know, we're pushing it away.
Right, I got you. So that's interesting. Are there other giveaway signs? I mean, things that people do with their hands, people do with their eyes?
You know, I always say when somebody's going to tie my hands, I will be stopped talking because my hands need to move around and work with me.
Of course.
But the moment in a baseline, if I start talking and I don't use my arms, and now I have to start using them because I'm not going to be able to talk, but if I stop using them, that's a tell I'm lying. And when I say I'm lying, it doesn't mean you have to say every person is lying, but my baseline is changing. And that is what we have to pick up on.
All right. Lying is a useful thing. In fact, you know, they've discovered in societies that the people who don't lie at all, honest as they may be and trustworthy as they may be, they never get ahead. Because being able to lie is actually a skill. And provided your lies aren't going to the extreme and hurting people and creating, you know, international genocide and terror, we all have the capacity to lie, and many of us are actually quite good at it. I mean, I know I've done stupid things and lied about them before in my life. I think all of us have, right? And kids learn to lie at a very early age, which just proves that it's not something nefarious that you're only taught if you're a bad person. Like, lying is something everybody learns at some stage. How do you differentiate between the good lies, which are kind of harmless, more or less? I mean, obviously, any incursion on the truth is in some way a bad thing. But how can you tell the difference between those ones and the ones that are really egregious and dangerous?
Well, it's like I said, Gareth, you know, we get this white lies, and we all lie in a general conversation. I mean, if you go through a one day, and I can already see these people with the core values of trust and honesty, and they go, oh, no, I never lie. Well, when the person passed you, you said, I'm fine, but you're not really fine.
Yes,
and this is what we need to understand as human beings. Most people will lie on, because we are protecting the way we look at each other. We don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. And that's a bit of an undercover lie, or we are withholding information. But the prolific liar is really, I want to call it the professional liar. You know, everything he does, he manipulates to work and gain for his benefit. And those are the people we want to look at. So we need to understand and distinguish between, you'll find a pig pill in an office, and I always say that's a 10% people. But, and no offense to the salespeople, because I mean, I'm a sales trainer. All corporate companies use me.
I know what you're going to say. You're going
to
say
train the salespeople.
The salespeople are the biggest liars, right?
Exactly, because we are taught, I teach people how to lie in front of the buyer to get the deal. Now, you go, what? No, I teach people how to manipulate the wording to make sure that people will react. Now, there's a fine line of lying. But at the same time, when we understand the prolific liar, he's going to lie to you to gain every single time. He would not take your emotions in consideration. He just wants it for his own gain. Your reputation's work, your credibility means nothing to him. That's the prolific liar.
What is... Here's something interesting from Derek. He says, what does the pitch change mean when women greet each other? Like, you know how sometimes, oh, hi, how are you?
Derek, you are really putting me in a big trouble now.
Why? What's the problem? What's he on to?
Well, the thing is, what we need to understand, women and God, ladies, I'm a big fan of us.
Yeah.
But what do? We are so insecure. And we want to show, we're having this ball of a life. Ooh, and we want to show you how wonderful we are.
When a woman gets high-pitched.
So when we get the high pitch, we want to tell you, you know, I really want to cry because the kid's nappies didn't work out and I'm late and I broke a nail. And if I'm going to tell you that, I'm not coping in the world. So I go, oh, I'm so fine. It's wonderful to see you. Meantime, back in the home, I'm tapping you at the back and I think, oh my word, can we just finish this conversation? I hope she doesn't see my mascara as much.
I usually know that two women don't like each other when they're too excited to greet each other. When there's a huge amount of excitement.
Come on.
I'm not saying
I always hear it as, you're better looking than me. I don't know how to tell you that. That's my favorite female interaction. As soon as the other lady's better looking than her, and it's competition, I love that. Ha! Oh my God, your nails so pretty!
What if you've got some good nails? What if I just like your nails? Can I not celebrate that? It's not always a competition. Society, stop telling us what we can or can't like on behalf of all women. Leave us alone.
Okay.
I have to tell you guys, is that the problem is that society is putting us the whole, you have to be perfect as women. And unfortunately, very few women, and that's why I've got a full-time job as a coach. You know, I have people coming to me on a daily basis because of their insecurities. Mm. And women, unfortunately, are portrayed to be this perfect figure, perfect everything. Mm. So when we interact with women, we are so comparing each other the whole time that we feel nervous, and that's when the lie comes out.
Okay.
Because we don't want them to know.
I don't want us to use this time because I want to talk to you about so much stuff this morning. And I know Lebang and Bulelo have got questions too. Let's not turn this into like women and their particular behaviors. Because there are things about dishonesty which both sexes get right. And often they can manipulate each other in ways that are completely unacceptable. How can you tell if someone's telling the truth? That's probably more useful. Like if you're in a conversation with someone and their answer really matters to you, like it's life or death, or let's not say life or death because those are very, it's very seldom that you require someone's honesty to the point of life or death anymore. But let's just look at honesty as a basic concept. I've always been taught if someone looks you in the eye and if they're not being shifty and if they're not moving around a whole lot while they're talking to you, they're probably quite trustworthy. Is that at all true or is that just bullshit as well?
That's one of the biggest bullshits there is about defining lies and truth. Oh. Because we think, because remember, as much as what I know, I'm a truthful person and I'm going to look you in the eyes and that's for me connection.
Mm.
The liars are listening. They know. The more I'm going to look you in the eye and I'm going to pretend how we connect, the more you're going to believe me. So I don't do a course how to detect a liar. I do a course to how to reveal the truth. And that's why I love the way you ask the question right now. Because when we interact with people with the same core values, and you pick that up, whether honest, they've got a pattern of showing and coming up and being responsible and reliable. That's when you start picking up on truths. And also, when you start understanding their baseline. Because remember, I'm not going to try and find out if you're going to lie to me right now if I only met you.
Mm.
I'm going to create a baseline. And like you say, not everybody's just going to lie for the sake of lying. And, it's, you know, I don't know if you're lying to me because I've asked you how are you. I mean, if I genuinely want to know how are you really, I will really ask different questions. I would say, how was your evening last night?
Yeah.
I want to ask you, how are you? And that's how we start revealing the truth.
This is so complicated. Like, there's some people who think that lying is the very worst thing you can do. And there's some people who have no problem with lies at all. I mean, I'm thinking of one person I know. And he's so good at lying that it's just now we all accept that it's just part of his personality. Okay? We never believe him, but we're willing to forgive him certain things just because, like, you know, it's part of who he is. So is that a healthy way for us to be interacting?
And that's me, by the way, Lizette.
No, it's not. No, it's not you. It's definitely not you.
Now. What we need to understand is what do we call health? And I'm going to come back to core values again, Gareth.
Hmm.
Because if my core values are communication, transparency, open-mindedness, and caring, you can lie as much as what you want to with me. And I will go and say, you know what, you're not transparent with me, so I'm not going to interact with you in my personal life. But when I do talk to you and I have to interact with you on a work relation, I will make sure that I give you certain spots, but I won't let you in completely. But for the guy who's extremely loyal, they will always interact and forgive that lying person. And that's the difference. So we need to ask the question, is it healthy? We have to change the question, is it healthy to me as a person in my core values? So if I keep on being forgiving and I feel frustrated, it's not healthy. But if I'm loyal to that extent, that's healthy.
Sure. That's so hectic. I want to know more about, like, how social media is, you know, kind of pushing people to lie. I have to know. Because people are using it as an outlet to do what? To lie. You spend your whole life lying to people,
yes,
to their faces. Now you can do it for free. We can't even see your facial expression. We can't even see if you're looking at us in the eyes. There's so many, you know, just cheat codes. So I guess I just want to know from your experience and your expertise how social media has shifted lying 101.
Well, I think the one thing, and it's a very good question, you know, the first thing which we need to understand is that we all know about fake news. We all know about what happens with social. How many selfies do you take before you post it on Instagram or on Facebook, etc.?
Right.
So we're all aware of that lie. But what you need to understand, when we think, and although we can pick up on an email, whether it's a lie email or a truthful email, we can pick up on the Instagram post, etc. But you won't believe it, but most people lie on the phone. Because why? They believe there's no record, and nobody can see them, and they can't see the mannerism. But on the phone call, you can hear so much of the pitch, the grammar, the full sentences that is not completed. And then you know and pick it up and lie. So on the social media, do we know people lie? Hell yes. If I want to meet the person who still believes everything on social media is true, the truth. We know it's a lie.
Mm.
And it's for us to decide, does it resonate with me? Am I going to take it? Am I going to do my homework to verify? Or am I just doing it as a no-brainer?
Yeah, and you're right, though, that, like, none of us actually think, oh, yeah, of course, everything on social media is true. Of course not, right? I mean, that would be ridiculous. But what Lebang is saying, too, is that this has become another vehicle for bullshit. It's become another place where people can lie, and they do. I mean, Lizette, this is why do we have such a need to gild the lily, to tell more truth than there is? Why do people overtell a story when they're lying? I mean, if it's the truth and it's kind of boring, just say it because it's the truth, right? But if it needs embellishment, that's often where you can tell that someone is talking nonsense.
Yeah. Well, you need to understand we have an inherent attraction and feeling to be accepted.
Yeah.
What is our biggest problem in society today is to be rejected, to be the outcast, to be the underdog, not being good enough.
Yeah.
So what do we do to make people love us? We mimic what is acceptable socially. We mimic what people would like. So when we say, you know, I like a white shirt, and then they go, but that sounds like boring. And now we're going to say, I like a white shirt with pearls and bought from XYZ. You know, we have to add it to go into the in crowd and say, oh, she's got something.
Yeah.
And it's all about acceptance. And that is why we add on some meat to a very skinny bone.
Listen, I loved what you... I loved what you were talking about there in terms of your core principles. In your book, do you speak of how to develop those naturally, as you said, if you have a baseline to refer back to in terms of, you know, we spoke about it a while ago, and people, I'm working through this with somebody, is establishing what your core principles are. Do you go through that in terms of how to get a
baseline? Indeed. You know, I've written a book, Finding Me, specifically to find out what your core values are. And I present that on a one-on-one basis as well, in a two-day workshop, individually, one-on-one. Because what we need to do is we first have to find ourselves who we are as a person without the labels. But then we have to find our core values. There are over 500 core values. And the moment we can drill that down to our own 20, we understand why you aggravate me, or why do I get so happy to speak to someone, and why I feel so uncomfortable greeting someone. It's because of the different core values. And if I believe you are a person who lies continuously, or I don't, you are a person who will do anything and hurt other people, my core value is going to say, I don't want to work with you. My core value is caring and empowerment. And that is how I train people to get to the point where they know I make decisions based on my core values and not on my emotions.
Sure. Amen.
All right.
Take a sec.
Wow.
Lizette, what about kids? Sorry, guys. I'm curious because it's something I'm struggling with. My 7-year-old is like fibbing now. He's in fib mode, where what you said about acceptance and wanting to feel like a part of something, he's really feeling that at school. He lets kids draw on him, you know, and he just allows people to do things to him. And I'm like, bro, but why are you doing this? He's like, no, he was too scared to tell them no, and he just said yes for certain things. And cool, I get that, but now, you know, how do I draw that line of, I don't want you to practice lying so much so that you use it as some sort of mechanism? And also, how do I not be too hard on you because you're still a kid and you're figuring things out?
I love the question, Tabang, and you know what you have to do? And this is what people forget. We are born with our own core values. It's unique as our thumbprint. So your child already has his own core values. But what we do, we are focusing on so much, oh, my child must be an honest child, he shouldn't be lying. What we should be focusing on is that embrace who you are, embrace your authenticity, and what do you stand for? Mm. Because if you don't know what you stand for, you will fall for anything.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's what we need to teach our children, to walk away from lies and rather embrace their authenticity.
What if the authenticity is lies?
Oh my God. And you're in big trouble. All right, so here are a couple of practical things, and you can maybe just go through these with us before we wrap it up for today. Without calling someone out on their lies, you could deal with them at work with 5 steps, you say. The first one is stand your ground. Unpack that for us, and then we'll go to the second one.
Okay. So when I say stand your ground, I don't mean create that big conflict and go in for, but call that liar out. You know, stand your ground and say, no, you say that you've sent the email, but I have confirmation that you haven't. So please tell me what happened really.
Okay.
Stand your ground.
All right. Number two is park the emotions, focus on the facts. This is something a lot of people struggle with, is to park the emotions. How do you do that?
Correct. And you know what is, and I always say, for anything you do, any decision you need to make, because remember, the moment you are being lied to, what's your first reaction? You have the audacity to lie to me. Yeah. You know, how dare you do this? And I take it personal.
Right.
But the moment I take that emotion and say, let's just park that anger, that hurt, is it on the side, and look at the facts. Then I look at the facts and say, you've lied. It wasn't personal because you had to do the game. You're protecting yourself or whatever reason. And now I can deal with the facts, and I can create that audit trail. And now when I bring back the emotions, it disappears because I see it for what it is and not emotional personal attack. Nothing in this world is personal.
Number three is keep a trail.
And, you know, Gareth, that's where I come back again, you know. Keep the emails, start confirming via telephonic, WhatsApp, email, SMS, etc. Because when they start criticize you at work to make them look good. You have a trial to go and prove that you have done what you needed to do.
Evidence. And number four, don't take it personally. This is going back to parking the emotions, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, we tend to think that anybody are purposely attacking me or lying to me or being nasty to me. But you need to understand, everybody, we have no control over anybody's reaction.
Yeah.
So we need to start understanding, I don't have control whether you're going to lie or not. And if I know it's not personal, I can focus on the facts.
Finally, no blame, no gain. What does that mean?
So what happens is when we start thinking, now what does the liar want to do? We ask the liar, did you send the email? And what is the first thing he'd be doing? Why do you ask me that question? He doesn't answer the question. He reflects it. The second thing he does, he blames the system and says, the server was down, etc. So when we start understanding that when the liar starts blaming, take all the blame away because then he can't have any gain. So when you start saying, don't blame the server, don't blame the company, don't do this, we have this in place. You haven't done. Take accountability.
Amazing. I love it.
Sure.
All right. This is terrific. This is all very useful information. Lizette, it's great to see you. If people want to follow you on Instagram, that's the best place to probably talk to Lizette. And you can also follow her on other social media. But Lizette_Folkvane on the Instagram is the best place to go. And thank you very much for your insights today. This is really interesting stuff. The human lie detector. Cheers, Lizette.
My pleasure. Nice. Have an awesome day.
Thank you. And you. I believe you. I really do. I believe you.
Trust me.
All right. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Cheers. CliffCentral.com